Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
My boy's waiting, smart.
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Andrew Garda.
I am friggin' velvety smooth.
Go.
And here we go again, folks. Yes, it's been a long time since we've done one of these. It's the hard count. I'm Andrew Garda, and I am staring over the abyss at the edge of death with the plague or a cold or a flu. Frankly, the fact that I'm able to breathe and move is a miracle, really, of NyQuil and sleep and a lot of other things. The fact that I have a voice is a miracle. I'm here for you guys. I know you've been dying because I haven't been around for like 3 weeks. I mean, you're pulling your hair out. You're going, oh, I don't have Garda's takes on anything. How do I know what to think? And here I am. I'm back. I'm doing this for you. And then I'm probably going to take next week off again because I'll be at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. So, you know, I tease you, as my boy Cecil Lammy over in Denver says, leave him wanting more. So I'm going to leave you wanting more today. It's probably going to be shorter than average so that I can actually crash, get this thing off the Nagler and Banky and crash. Now, I'm a little choked up because a lot of friends have had some heartache in the last week or so. Packer Nation is in chaos because Packer Nation watch the fall of the Roman Empire, like, right before their eyes, Sunday night. How bad was it? It was so bad that we missed part of the first half, myself and my young son. We missed part of the first half, and I sat down to watch the second half, and I'm watching it. I mean, you know, early on, the second half wasn't completely out of control, but it wasn't good. And my son, my older son, comes over. And he says, I said, oh, yeah, Green Bay Giants game. Come on over. Watch football with me. He's like, all right. So he sat down. He's like, what's the score? Who's winning? I said, the Giants. And the look on his face was only matched by the look on his face when we returned from the football guy's trip in Las Vegas, and he discovered that he had missed a weekend of playoff football. Like, the disbelief was palpable. It was full on his face. It was hilarious. Like, I mean... The funny thing about it is he didn't have a dog in that fight. Pardon me, Mr. Vick. But he didn't, you know, he wanted to see good football. Like, he didn't really care much if the Giants won. He kind of cared a little bit more that the Packers won. Because he knows, you know, he's met Mr. Corey. He's met Mr. Nagler several times. And so he knows I do the Cheesehead TV thing. I'm the NFL guy there. So, you know, he has a little more affection for them. But he was just stunned. He was also stunned at how badly the Denver Broncos got beat. Because that was ugly. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk a little bit about an article in the New York Times that was slamming Tebow, not for his play, but for his actions after the game. And if you think that this was a case where someone found out that, you know, Tebow was doing blow off strippers' behinds, no. We're going to talk about that in a minute or two, but let's focus on the games. Because there were three really interesting games. The Baltimore Ravens-Houston game was not all that interesting. I don't think it was all particularly good. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't mean to diss Ravens fans or Texans fans, but I don't know. It just had that feel where you knew there were some problems. You know, you knew that there might be some issues. You know, TJ Yates can only take you so far. They didn't really use Arian Foster all that well. It was a close game. You know, 13-20, that's an admirable loss. You're in Baltimore. It's a tough place to play. It's a good defense. You got a decidedly mediocre Joe Flacco who played pretty well. If Matt Schaub had been there, I think this is a whole different game, but he wasn't. You know, Texan fans should be happy, though, because I think they have one to build on. I think that going into next year, they're looking actually pretty good. And you know, again, I think that it wasn't bad. I mean, Yates completely fell apart. Three turnovers, as young Master Tebow will tell you, will not win you a game. Neither will 184 yards. Arian Foster did everything he could, 132 yards and a touchdown. Andre Johnson, 111 yards, didn't find the end zone. That's because Yates didn't find the end zone either. You know, there wasn't enough. I think Yates could be a decent backup, maybe even a low-end, low-tier starter, but not now. And I think getting frustrated with Yates as some fans have been, I think is ridiculous. I mean, he took you farther than he had any right as a third string. Was it sixth round? Undrafted? Free agent? There is no reason. None. Free agents to have done that well. You know, let's be honest. Joe Flacco wasn't all that impressive. 176 yards and two touchdowns. Woo! It really was a case of defensively, the Ravens doing what they do. And offensively, doing just enough. I wrote an article on Bleacher Report. This is Tuesday night, so last night, this morning, pairing up wide receivers with new quarterbacks. Wide receiver pairings that it's sort of an exercise in fun. Like, none of these are happening. I'll tell you what. Joe Flacco needs another wide receiver. Anquan Boldin is an okay possession receiver. And I think Torrey Smith could be a very good receiver. But right now, he's just not good enough to pull the defense completely off. And he's not polished enough. I mean, the problem with him has always been that he's raw. So, I got to tell you, going into New England, I just don't see this being a win for them. You know, hey, who am I to say? I really didn't expect Green Bay to lose. So, you know, anything can happen. You know, anything can happen here. But the pairing I was thinking of when it comes to quarterback Joe Flacco and his need for a dominant wide receiver, which, again, Anquan Boldin is not going to be. He's not going to be a dominant wide receiver. Torrey Smith might. He might, but I don't expect it all that much. But looking at the pairings, and there are some interesting ones. I tried to help. So check it out. Look at me under. Go to Bleacher Report. Look for Andrew Garda. I tried to help some of the younger quarterbacks, and tried to give some of the other quarterbacks some weapons. Joe Flacco and Greg Jennings, I thought, and Green Bay Packer fans probably just threw up in their mouth. You know, again, this is an exercise and just sort of fun. But this is what I said. If we're talking straight line speed matched with a huge arm, seeing Greg Jennings in a Ravens uniform, while odd, would make a lot of sense. This is the thing. Torrey Smith can lengthen the field, can go vertical. But he's very raw. And he's not going to be able to beat those double teams that will come when he's really effective. Maybe, you know, Pitta and Dixon, the tight ends, might take some of that off him, but they're always going to be the short game. And Anquan Boldin's not going to be going deep very often either. They need someone. Now, I said Greg Jennings because why not? I mean, he's got incredible speed. He's a very good vertical receiver. He runs a go route like nobody's business. Joe Flacco, I think, is a limited skill set, but he can throw long, and I think he's fairly accurate when he does it. Ergo, I think that Flacco and Jennings would be a good fit. It's never going to happen. I'll just say that right now. And by the way, I just discovered that I think I had this on the webcam mic and not the regular mic. So hopefully a little better sound quality right now. Let's find out.
All right, let's see. Hopefully that's much better. Anyway, so let's move on and see what we got here. What I was saying. So Flacco, I think, with a better wide receiver would be a better quarterback. He's never going to be an elite quarterback. He's going to be a better quarterback. Anyway, so aside from that, we, of course, had the great New England massacre of Tebow. Really, what can you say about this game except for nothing? Nothing was ready to go on Denver's part. Like, nothing. It's easy enough to look at what Tebow did or didn't do and blame him on it completely. 136 yards. That's not pretty. 9 for 26. He was plagued once again with drops. He was under pressure a lot. The offensive line did not play well. The defense was completely oblivious. Like, that first half, like, that was it. Like, by the time you got to the end of the second quarter, it's 35-7. And that defense never looked the same. And really, like, after that, the Patriots didn't do all that much. I mean, they scored a field goal and a touchdown. They really only added, like, another 10 points. It's just, you know, when you look at it, the entire team is to blame. The entire team played badly. Tebow played badly. The defense played badly. Von Miller and Elvis Dumervil were completely non-existent. There was just nothing good about Denver's performance across the board. Now, of course, this brings us up to Tebow, and there are two things I want to talk about with Tebow. So Aaron Nagler, who can't stand Tebow talk, and anyone else can turn it off for a couple minutes. Okay, everybody else still here? Great. Here's the thing about Tebow. He played sporadically good and sporadically bad the whole tail end of the season. They would absolutely not be in the playoffs if Tebow had not been under center. Brady Quinn wasn't going to do it. Kyle Orton was not going to do it. Just wasn't going to happen. And you could tell that by the crappy way that Orton played early. In every report, out of practice, once the season started, that Quinn just wasn't going. And by the way, and if you followed me on Twitter during the first weekend of the playoffs, like, trust me, if you're in a situation where you're wondering whether you're going to have Brady Quinn come in on third down, go find Mike Kliss of the Denver Post. Go follow our boy Cecil Lammy. Go follow the beat writers. I'm not naming any names, but some people took really simple nuggets and ran with them as if they were truth. I said it today to someone because we were talking about Eli Manning says maybe Peyton's going to show up. Maybe he'll play in the Jets. I mean, he didn't even say it. He really was like, someone said, hey, would it be cool if you and Peyton were in the same city? And he was like, yeah, we probably wouldn't see each other all that much, but he'd be pretty cool. It'd be neat. Which became, Eli Manning thinks that Peyton Manning is going to play for the Jets and return and go to New York. That's not happening. First of all, Archie Manning can't stand Rex Ryan. Second of all, I can't imagine that Peyton Manning would get along with Rex Ryan. Third of all, they just hired Tony Sperano to be offensive coordinator. They'll throw the ball begrudgingly. I'm not saying they're going to go completely ground and pound. They're going to try and air it out a little bit just to see if Sanchez can do it. Because this is, I mean, Aaron and I talked about it in August. And this was a huge season for Sanchez, and he fell on his face. He was horrible. Terrible, as Charles Barkley would say. But he got one more year. They're not going to get rid of him. They got rid of Schottenheimer. I think that was a good first step. This time next year, we may be talking about how the Sanchez was a terrible pick and a bust, at least with the Jets. He may go on somewhere else and have success. But that's down the road. We may also be talking about what a difference it made with Tony Sperano and, you know, new people in the coaching staff and people Ryan wanted. And I mean, because let's face it, there are two things the Jets have problems with. One, offensive play calling. Two, chemistry in the locker room, which even LaDainian Tomlinson came out and was like, you know, the wide receivers are jerks, is essentially what he said. But I digress. So, you know, ultimately, it's a situation where rumor, in that case, Eli Manning, not even a rumor, just a random quote, Eli Manning says that it would be neat to have Peyton Manning in New York, which is run then by Pro Football Talk as Peyton Manning looks like he might go to New York. And then, of course, Jim Caldwell is fired today, and oh God, things lose. Let's just cut to the chase. The Jets, Woody Johnson, I like Woody Johnson, I think he's a good owner, he's a bit of a star whore, so he may go after Peyton Manning, but I don't think Manning's going to want to come. And I don't think that the Jets are going to really want him all that much. So let's put that to bed. Also putting to bed was the idea that Brady Quinn was going to come in on third downs. Right? Someone came out and said, he took a lot of snaps on Friday. And then if you go to the local reporters and less high-profile writers, it was, well, I texted Brady, and he said, I took the same two snaps I take every Friday. And Mike Kliss, who was like, Brady Quinn did not take any special snaps. He is not running third down plays. If you listen to the beat writers, you listen to guys who know the local teams better than the national guys. That's why you Packer fans come to Cheesehead TV. Because Aaron and Benke and Brian Caravu and the group here have it wired. That's why Jet fans go to the Jets blog. Brian Bassett has it wired. He knows people. He's got people coming to the site, excuse me, He's got writers who are beat writers writing at the site. Sometimes you just got to use some reasoning and do a little research. You know, the first thing I did was check my beat writer sources. So Tebow's not going anywhere. And Elway has said, I'm going to work on his technique and mechanics with him all offseason. So this is it. And maybe since I've given Sanchez like 55 attempts and chances, I should probably give Tebow the same. But frankly, if Tebow can't progress enough this year, we have to see a real progression. We have to see more accuracy. He has to read the defenses better. He has to set his feet better. There's a lot of stuff. We'll break it down later on in the offseason when we go around the league. There's a lot of improvements he needs to make. John Elway is a guy, and he's the president of football operations. I had someone today who was like, presidents of businesses don't mentor interns. That's their supervisor's job. Once again, let me point out that the entertainment industry and football are not your job. John Elway is one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of football and works for the Denver Broncos. They have a quarterback who has issues. Why in the name of Tebow would you not have Elway help him out? Think, folks. But again, that loss wasn't just about Tebow. There were some really bad Tebow moves, some bad Tebow plays, some awful defensive plays. It highlighted everything that's wrong with the Broncos and everything that's right with the Pats. I mean, that's a dynamic offense. You get them rolling, you're in some real trouble. Hernandez, Gronkowski, Welker. Forget about it. There's some talk, and some people I've talked to have talked about it. Brandon Lloyd's probably not going to stay with St. Louis. He had his best season ever under Josh McDaniels. Where's Josh McDaniels? Now, New England. As a Jets fan, that scares the absolute poop out of me. That's terrible. Terrible. I don't want to see it. But it could very well happen. I digress. I mean, the only problem with the Pats beating the Ravens this week is that their defense is horrible. But Joe Flacco is not good enough to take advantage of it. Saints, Packers, Giants, they could. Not the Ravens. Probably not the Niners. And then, of course, Giants-Packers. All right, if the Denver defense sort of regressed to crap and highlighted a need for more pass-rushing help and more cornerback help and a better offensive line, what did we learn from the Packers? Well, nobody came to play. Rodgers was off. Now, maybe it wasn't rust from his layoff, but there was a touchdown early on that could have happened that was missed only because it was miscommunication between Jennings and Rodgers. Rodgers scrambled right. Jennings is wide open. Rodgers throws it, figuring he's going to hit him over the right shoulder in stride. Instead, Jennings stops. The ball goes over his head. Total missed opportunity. That is one of those plays that changed the shape of the game. And it was so confused. Like, my son couldn't figure out why Rodgers wasn't running for the touchdown because he didn't see that Jennings was so wide open. And it was just a bad throw. It was just a bad miscommunication. And that was, you know, 6 drops or 8 if you listen to some other people. It's too many. It's too many for Rodgers. He didn't play well. Most of the receivers didn't play well. The linebackers were non-existent. The defensive line was pretty much non-existent. The secondary was atrocious. Tremont Williams and Charles Woodson got lit up like the 4th of July. Hakeem Nicks and Vincent Cruz, wow. The thing is, the difference between a team like Denver and a team like the Packers is, I think ultimately the Packers have a lot less, well, I mean, I don't think, I know. The Packers have a lot less to do. They have got to figure something out on the offensive line. Injuries were a problem this year, but overall, you know, let's be honest, they just need to solidify it. They need to do something to get their secondary a little more consistent. I think wide receiver-wise, they're fine. Like, maybe Donald Driver doesn't come back, but I think Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, rookie, who I thought played pretty well overall this season, and Greg Jennings will be fine. JerMichael Finley probably tagged. Matt Funn probably gone in free agency. Ryan Grant probably got in free agency, but that's fine because they've got Brandon Sane and Starks. So I think that the Packers will be fine. They just had a really crappy game, and they chose the wrong time to do it. Meanwhile, I'll tell you what, the Giants remind me of the Giants who beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl just a few years ago. Eli Manning, I'm still not buying him as an elite quarterback, but yeesh, he has had a hell of a season. He had a heck of a game. He was able to take advantage of defensive miscues and turnovers. And there you go, folks. So we've got Giants and Niners. Excuse me. There's that cough. See? Plague. Now it's on my microphone. Someone's going to touch it. Black plague is going to be loose in New York City. But the Niners and the Saints, that was interesting too. That was a little tighter game, of course. And ultimately, that also turned on some turnovers. And Breeze, like Rodgers, that's pretty unusual. Alex Smith showed us something. He came back from behind. Not once, but twice. This is something that I haven't seen Alex Smith do before. And he's doing it with one really good tight end, a tremendous running back, and an okay wide receiver. And that's pretty much it. Ted Ginn Jr. is not that good. Williams isn't that good. Crabtree's pretty good, but not great. You know, there's another team that could desperately use a marquee wide receiver. Maybe the guy across the field from them, Marcus Colston, or Robert Meacham. But Alex Smith showed me a lot. He had a tremendous game. And really, I mean, what's there not to like about it? I don't think there's anything not to like about what Alex Smith did. It's going to be hard for me to believe that they're going to beat the Giants, but that defense is playing at a high level. If that defense shows up, this could be a much different game than the Packers-Giants. Especially with the Giants basically saying, we were much happier to play the Niners than the Saints. Saints don't tend to lose at home, but I'll tell you, the Niners can be tough. So, this should be a very good set of matchups this weekend. Excuse me while I cough up a lung. So I said I had a Tebow story I wanted to talk about, and I'm sorry about that, because you're all burnt out. But this is probably one of the last Tebow stories for some time. So, there was a New York Times article, and now I can't remember the writer. I'll see if I can look it up here real quick. Okay, it was a New York Times article by Harvey Aretone. I don't really know his work. He's writing out of Foxborough, Massachusetts, because he was up at the game. So go look for curtain closes on Tebow's season, but his sideshow goes on. Google that with Harvey Aretone, A-R-A-T-O-N. For shame, New York Times. For shame. This is nothing but a hit piece. Aretone should be ashamed he wrote it. This is basically a story about how Tim Tebow clearly had his priorities screwed up because instead of hanging with his team after his press conferences at the end of the loss, he upheld a promise to a 20-year-old and his family who had sustained a traumatic brain injury in a high school football game and left him mentally disabled. So he couldn't go to school, can't live on his own. It's through Tebow's foundation and I believe the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And if you read the piece, basically, you get a sense that Aretone was turned down for an interview when he wanted it. Like, he had to wait or something. Overall, it wasn't a bad day, Tebow said after a 45-10 playoff drubbing by the Pats. It depends on what lens you look through. Tebow, as usual, was looking through the light of a devoutly religious life. In the corridor, he hugged the young man whose parents, Pat and Tammy, called themselves devout Christians and said their son had been to South Africa on a mission months before his injury. Soon they were all praying together, and here's the part that really starts telling you what the author's agenda is. While a protective cocoon of Tebow's people formed around the pair, becoming huffy when a couple of reporters, Aretone, stopped to observe. Private family time, one said, which was strange because the scene was hard to miss public spectacle. Like so much of the Tebowing phenomenon, and it lasted considerably longer than any Denver drive. I'm sorry. Did he shove you in a locker when you were young? Harvey Arrington? Did he beat you up? Did he kick your puppy? Good Lord. I'm sorry. He's praying with his Make-A-Wish Foundation kid or guy and the family.
And, oh, you're not allowed to go and join because you just want to report on what's being said.
It's a private conversation, you jackhole. It was after midnight, and Tebow's teammates were nowhere in sight, gone from the locker room and perhaps the stadium. A while earlier, John Elway had walked past the scrum, seemingly paying it no mind on his way to the bus, in a long camel coat, a cell phone pressed to his ear. And at that moment, you had to wonder if Elway, the Denver vice president and most famous Bronco of all, really believed, if he ever did, that Tebow could be the unquestioned quarterback of an NFL title contender. Elway wasn't in the mood to talk, not right now, he said politely, but good luck to him if he had any thoughts of dislodging Tebow in the near future, even if he already was convinced that Tebow will never become more than a gadget player, a Wildcat specialist. Once again, let's examine that. All right, Elway's on the phone. That's why he didn't want to talk. He was probably a little pissed that they got beat, and beat badly. But to make the leap
that he's probably upset that Tebow's playing okay is retarded.
And I actually feel bad for saying that, just basically because we were talking about a kid with a mentally disabled disability. So I'm sorry. It basically goes on to basically say, basically, you know, how you don't know what's going to happen, but it's a spectacle, and, you know, you never know. And, you know, maybe it wasn't Tebow's fault that Brady destroyed the Denver secondary, but his three completions for 28 yards as they fell behind in the 35-7 hole had to make Elway wonder if he could have done better against what had been a porous Patriots defense if he had taken over in a suit and tie. Really? Really? Seriously? Excuse me. He comes off as exceedingly earnest and sincere, he goes on a little bit later, through his religious invocations, can have the same repetitive effect of those uttered during a Miss America pageant, which can sometimes be that way. Once again, here's some insight. Being uncomfortable with them doesn't make one a hater or a heathen, just one of the many who wonder if it's an appropriate time and place, and if the football environment doesn't always have to be one of them. Maybe as part of the growth process, Tebow will figure it out. Listen, I don't necessarily love it. Guess what? Tune it out. You don't like it? Tune it out. You don't have to listen. Tune that out. It's 5 seconds of your day. And he doesn't say God made him win. He always says God helped give me the ability to be where I am, to have the opportunity to play this game. Of the really ridiculous things players say after they win or lose about God, that's pretty low on the priority list. That's pretty low on the hit list. As he always does, he thanked his teammates for their support and effort immediately after praising God. That's very telling as well, by the way. But one was left to surmise that he, the Broncos' purported leader, should have been with them late Saturday night instead of in the corridor tending to his personal business, no matter how giving it was. There are many times when duty to team comes first. Surely one of them is in the wake of a lopsided and season-ending defeat. That is one of the most lopsided and agenda-ridden articles I've ever read in my life. And you guys know I'm not like a huge Tebow wonk, but good Christ. Irony, by the way, saying good Christ. Tell me, I mean, go to the New York Times and read that article and tell me that you don't think that that sounds like someone who was shoved into a locker. He just can't stand that Tebow didn't want to take time out of his day after a big game to talk to him. That's what it sounds like. That's my call. That's what I'm saying. I don't know this dude, but that's what this smells like. Because you know what? Did you follow every other player on the team? Do you know where Von Miller was? Do you know where Champ Bailey was? Champ Bailey's a big leader on this team. What about Willis McGahee? Were they crying in the locker room? Were they back in the hotel room? Were they out drinking, eating dinner? Did you follow them, Everton? No, I don't think you did. Because Everton, your story was taking Tebow down a pace. Listen, there is a lot of issues with Tebow, both as a quarterback and perhaps as a person. There's a lot to not like and like. But you are a special kind of D-bag when you attack him spending time with a 20-year-old mentally disabled kid after a game. And I guarantee you that this jackass would be out there complaining that Tebow didn't hold up his end of the bargain if Tebow had hung out with his players. If Tebow had been weeping in front of his locker room. If Tebow had said, I'm sorry, kid. I feel really bad right now. I'm not in a good space of mind. Let's do this tomorrow. This dude would have been all over him. Absolutely, 100% guarantee. And if he happens to hear this, he's welcome to email me. thunderandblurb@gmail.com. Because I will debate it with him, and I'll do it on the air. I guarantee you that he would be all up Tebow's business if he hadn't gone to this kid. Oh, he's such a fake. Oh, he's the guy who promises one thing and doesn't do it. It's one of two articles this week that got me livid. Shame on you, New York Times. Shame on you, editorial staff. That's a crap article and way beneath you. That's a New York Post article. That's an Inquirer article. That isn't even an independent blog article. You know, recently, a certain writer basically called Nagler a blogger as a put-down. And it was hysterical. It's always hysterical when you hear the mainstream media get scared, and that's what that is. But this was beneath even the least connected and worst hack I've ever read. It's just dirty. You know, maybe I won't make it full-time as a writer. I believe I will. I believe that I will continue to get paid the way I am now and continue to climb the career ladder. If I do it, or if I don't, I'm going to be happy because I didn't deal in dirt like this. This is unbelievable, unconscionable, and utter garbage. Whether you like Tebow or not, this is garbage. Let's move on. I got to get the taste out of my mouth. That's not even flu or cold on my tongue. That's just disgust. Let's just move right to the next disgusting piece. Because why not? I'm already enraged. Maybe I can get the rest of the enrage out. Like I can get the flu or cold out by being pissed off. So to me, this has started to become more and more of a concern throughout the week. And this is probably, I'm either going to touch on this on a second show this week or in an article. But I didn't really believe it was much a problem on Monday. Here we are Tuesday night, and I got a bad feeling about this. Just, if I had the aliens drop, that's what I would use. So, February 1st, St. Louis officials need to decide on the budget and what kind of funding sources they're going to have to try and keep the Rams from breaking their lease if their stadium isn't quote-unquote top tier. Now, some of this set off my lovely wife this morning. She was listening to NPR, I think. And her take on it was much more, listen, you're complaining because nobody's seeing your team. Your team sucks. Not only does your team suck, but it costs an arm and a leg to go see the team. You're going to move them to LA where you're going to build a giant stadium, and no one's going to be able to afford to buy that team either, to buy tickets. The only people you're going to get are the people who are really rich. And that's kind of how they want it. That's how the Lakers function there. That's how, hell, even the Clippers are functioning there. Even the Dodgers, Family Four, when we used to go on occasion to a Dodger game, which is pretty much the cheapest ticket in town, cost us an arm and a leg. So to my wife, this is about elitism. This is about classism. And you guys have heard me talk about this before. And if you dig into my YouTube channel, I've done rants about this before in video. And I'll likely do another one. This is about... It's never about the average fan anymore. This is about the corporate fan. Listen, the FCC is looking at the blackouts right now, whether they're legal or not, because basically they're like, people have approached and said, I can't afford tickets. I can't afford tickets. I can't buy tickets, but you're not letting me see the game. I want to support the team, but I can't afford the $150 plus the $30 to $40 parking. And that's if I go by myself. If I want to go with a friend or family member, that's $300 easily. And I know what I speak of because every year I take my older son out to a football game. We didn't do that this year. It's getting to the point where we might as well fly out to Cincinnati or Denver and get a cheap ticket there just for the experience as it is to go to a Giant or Jet game or even an Eagle game. It's too expensive. It's just as expensive to go to those as it is to fly somewhere to go to a game. So she's not wrong. She's dead on right. This has never been about the average fan. And she's right. I think LA can support a team. LA lost the teams because Georgia Frontier, then owner of the Rams, and if you see the irony there, it's there, got a better deal with St. Louis, didn't like Los Angeles and Anaheim, wanted to move. Al Davis convinced the city of Oakland to fork over a truckload of cash. He hosed them and blew out LA first chance he got. It had nothing to do with attendance, very little. I mean, the character in Major League, the owner who was the owner's wife, follow me there? Excuse me, I'm dying, sorry. I'm getting too agitated. The owner's wife, there is a rumor that she was based on Georgia Frontier. A lot of people don't like Miss Frontier. When she passed, not many tears were shed in Los Angeles. A team can survive there. I'm not sure that a team can survive there the way that the NFL does business, though. And I think that there will be a tremendous amount of shock in the NFL when they move in and no one can afford the $300 upper deck tickets or the $20,000 PSL. Because guess what? The LA City, broke. Completely broke. That brings me to my other rant about this. All right. Right now, the dome that St. Louis is in sees a tremendous influx from local revenue. Every year, Missouri spends $12 million to pay off the 30-year debt they had of $256 million in revenue bonds to build the dome initially, which when they finally finish paying it will be $720 million. St. Louis and St. Louis County both pay $6 million annually. So that's let me do my math. I don't have a calculator, but $24 million a year. Now, maybe the stadium is a POS. But you guys just got $1 billion. Like, the owners just locked the players out to get $1 billion, and you're telling me that now you've got your hand out again? Are you out of your bloody mind? I said it before. When Aaron and I were doing the show during the lockout, I'm going to say it again. You guys almost lost us a season of football, owners, you greedy sons of bitches. Because you didn't want to hold the small market owners, like the Rams, like the Bills, their feet to the fire and get the money back you wanted, or you wouldn't shut up the Jerry Joneses and the big market owners who didn't want to pay for them anymore. You won't let natural selection take its place, so you continue to try and pass that buck onto us, the fans, onto our states, onto our cities. It's getting to the point where I think that the province of Quebec had it right. In case you don't know what I'm talking about, many years ago, Quebec had a hockey team. They were the Quebec Nordiques, the city of Quebec, province de Quebec. They weren't great. They were up and coming. And one day they said, we need a better stadium. Now, this is not a great team. This is a St. Louis Rams type team. Probably a little better than the Rams. They said, we need money for a new stadium. New stadium or we are walking, bitches. And Quebec went, huh. Well, I got to tell you, we've got some cash problems. We could really use some money in the hospitals. We could really use some money in our education system. Move. We don't care. Hockey in Canada. They basically said, we don't want to lose you, but we can't afford to keep you. Don't want to lose you, can't afford to keep you. They moved, they won a Stanley Cup. I've always hated that, but I've always respected Quebec for making that decision. Because frankly, public money shouldn't be going to these billionaires. Look at MetLife Stadium where the Giants and Jets play. That was pretty much, it might be fully, privately financed. Oh, how Jerry Jones must turn over in his coffin when he's sleeping away the daylight before he goes out at night to suck the blood of young virgins. Seriously, guys, this can be done privately. And then you have an excuse to me to talk to the players about more revenue coming your way. Because teams like the Giants and Jets invested, and they have taken on the risk. Teams like the Dallas Cowboys have not. Teams like the Dallas Cowboys, the Rams, San Diego, these are teams that are looking for handouts every single time. Oh, we might leave. We might need to go somewhere else if you don't give us more money. I want to slap that look off their face every time I hear it. So I got to tell you, the fact that our friend, Mr. Kroenke, I think is how you pronounce his name. Kroenke. Today, on Tuesday, decided not to renew their commitment to St. Louis. I'm a little worried. And you know what? As a former Los Angelino, who may or may not move back there one day, who always wanted to have some professional football there, other than the USC Trojans, because they're paid, or minor league football like the UCLA Bruins. Gotcha. I'll tell you what. I don't want a carpet-bagging team. I would never want someone else's team. I realize that that may be the only way we get it, but I wouldn't want it. I'm so glad that being out here in New York, that there are so many teams that are not going anywhere anytime soon. I can't tell you how happy I am about something like that. Kroenke said of the lease that allows the Rams to leave after the 2014 season, if the Edward Jones Dome isn't among the top 25% of NFL stadiums, I'm sorry, dude, you're not going to be. You're not going to be. You guys suck. You guys are terrible. The fans have come out and you keep raising ticket prices. I think this is all out there. The chronology of what occurs with the lease is public knowledge. I don't think for me to comment on that process is particularly timely. Oh, actually it is, because it's happening now, because your city is freaking out. The city or the authority has, within their power, they're dealing with their side of it, and they present a proposal to us by February 1st. There's a team in place that deals with all that, so we'll see how the process sorts itself out. It's a thing that takes place over time. As I said earlier, I started in St. Louis, and 1 year from now, that will be 20 years. So I've been around a long time. Contrary to a lot of reports, I haven't taken a lot of jack out of the market. I think that's what's been reported. I've put a lot of jack into the market. For the record, according to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, they like any NFL owner who refers to money publicly as Jack. However, before we go completely nuts here, do remember, again, as an ex-Los Angelino, ultimately, Los Angeles is a bargaining tool for most teams. I think LA will get a team, and it'll probably be a moving team. Could be San Diego. Maybe it will be St. Louis. Couldn't even be the Vikings. Excuse me. But, there's a good chance that at least half of those teams, at least two of the three that I'm thinking off the top of my head, in Jacksonville, I'm not thinking of one of them, at least two of the three will use LA as leverage. I think as big a threat, by the way, is moving a team to London. Again, you guys have heard me rail about this. I think it's a horrible idea. I think it's happening. I think it'll happen within the next 10 to 15 years. I think it will be something that will go horribly awry for a lot of reasons, which you can look back in the From the Press Box archives, and I'm sure we'll get into it at some point in this offseason. So there's two rants today. Maybe I won't have enough left in an article to do the Rams thing. Maybe not. That's okay. There's always something to write about around here, you know? So that's going to do it for this particular edition. Like I said, I'm going to try and come back and do another one later in the week if I can still breathe. At very worst, there will definitely be From Press Box. Next week, I don't know what it's going to look like. I will be in Mobile at the Senior Bowl covering it as credentialed media. Thank you, Cheesehead TV. And I'm going to try and update every night a little bit of what I see. I'm going to talk to some of the guys on staff and see if there's anyone there looking at that they'd like me to take a look at. But by and large, it's going to be a lot of stream of consciousness, my thoughts on who popped out and who really sucked. And then we'll sort it out as time goes on. But I'm excited about that. I'm going out there with Cecil Lammy. Again, you hear his voice. You hear his name everywhere, all the time on this show. Of 102.3, the ESPN affiliate in Denver. I'll be going out with Matt Waldman. Both of them fellow football guys. Matt Waldman also does an extremely good offensive look at the draftees, called the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I urge you to pick it up when it comes out and to check out his site. And I will also be going with Gene Bramall, who's another football guy who is a med-type guy. He'll be looking at a lot of defense stuff. So we're going to get a lot of good insight. I'm going to try and lead you to places. Now, if you want to know what's going on in the Shrine Game down in Florida, which is the first of the All-Star Games, the big ones are the Shrine, the Senior Bowl. Used to be the NFLPA, but they're allowing juniors, so that's going to be a really weird game this year. I know Wes Bunting of National Football Post and Lammy are going to go to the Battle for the Rock in Little Rock, Arkansas, which is supposed to be the next big one. So, I mean, if you want to know what's going on in the Shrine, head over to National Football Post, look up Wes Bunting stuff. Head over to footballguys.com, go to the forum, the Shark Pool, check out what Cecil's doing. And then next week, keep an eye on both of those places as well as Cheesehead TV to get all the latest info on some of the hot prospects in the draft. I'll be back Thursday night, Friday morning. I might catch up if I have some audio. I might throw something together during the week. I just don't know how it's going to look. Last time we were in Mobile, the wireless died, and we had to go to a Hooters after hours to sneak their wireless. So hopefully we won't be doing that again. After hours, I swear. But that's going to do it. And like I said, going to try and be back a little later this week. We'll see how my voice holds up. Thank you for joining me. Once again, thanks to Corey and Aaron for getting me the Senior Bowl credential and for hosting this podcast. Sorry I've been gone so long, but I've been hunted by moose in Alaska and then chased after by goons in Vegas. So it's been a long few weeks. And that's pretty much it. See you guys maybe later this week, maybe next week, definitely the week after. This has been The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Have yourself a great weekend and enjoy the games Saturday and Sunday, even if you're a Packer fan and you are very, very sad right now. Very, very, very sad. But hey, at least you're not a Saints fan who got assaulted in the 49ers parking lot. Maybe we'll talk about that later this week. Take it easy.
You've been listening to The Hard Count.
Let's go again!
With your host, Andrew Garda.
And you will know my name is the law when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Word!